tempo matching the beat in my head. Arjal's eyes widen in surprise, and then he nods slowly.
Yours, then.
Mine, I say with fierce pleasure. I resonate to her. No one will ever take her from me. She is mine, and mine alone. 6. Cathar. Neither myself nor Arjal are interested in the egg any longer. We part from the beach without another word, each of us carrying off our burdens as quickly as we can. He cannot take my female from me, not with my resonance song thrumming in my breast. But I know he feels vulnerable, since he has not resonated to his. I just want to be alone with my female. I want to look at her, explore her, learn about her, awaken her, see her look at me. I want to hear her cooey resonate to mine. That it is not yet is not troubling me. She is unconscious and in a deep sleep. Once she wakes up, it will draw her to me as mine is drawn to hers. Resonance is never one-sided. All I have to do is wait. I carry her as quickly and as carefully as I can, moving swiftly down the shore and heading toward the distant tree line. When we are out of the open, I set her gently down in the shade of a large fern underneath one of the tallest trees. Here she will be sheltered from any patrolling skyclaw or wandering kari. I kneel down beside her and touch my fingers to her chin, tilting her head toward me. She yet sleeps. Is she sick? My worried gaze flicks over her. She breathes shallowly, but she breathes. Her skin is unnaturally pale, and when the fern fronds ripple their shadows over her, she does not change colors to adapt. I do not understand. Even the youngest of kits knows from the day it leaves its mother's body that it must camouflage to survive. I worry that something deep inside her is broken, that I have found my mate only to lose her. No, I murmur, and I take her small hand in my own. You are mine. Now that I have found you, you will wake up and you will join me. We will make many kits together and work to bring our clan back to greatness. I press her palm to my mouth, breathing in the scent of her skin. She smells like the salty waters of the sea and something else, something sweet and holy her. I notice as I press my face against her skin that she does not react to my nearness either. I also notice she has an extra finger. Odd. I examine her other hand, and she has one there, too. A birth anomaly. Like our clans with the identifying features. It's been said that sometimes a member of the Tall Horn clan would be born with forearms, or the furred skin of the Shadowed Cat clan, and the kit would be taken from his family and given to the correct clan. I have never heard of someone being born with extra fingers, however. Nor have I heard of anyone camouflaging to such a strange color and staying there. Again, I wonder if she is ill. I touch her face gently, caressing her cheek and brow. I press my ear to her chest, but I can hear nothing through the strange things she has covered her body with. Perhaps these are the problem. Maybe they are why her camouflage does not seem to be working. I need to take them off of her. Then I can better gauge what is ailing her. I run my hands along her arms, looking for a way to pull these strange skins off of her. They smell like hide, and I worry they are connected to her somehow, and that removing them will harm her. When I tug at them, though, it does not seem to pain her. I move my hands underneath the hides, searching for an attachment to her skin of some kind, but all I feel is softness underneath. Just touching her makes my cock ache in a way I have never felt before. It becomes too much to bear, and I pull my hands back, closing my eyes and breathing hard as I strive to contain myself. A resonance mate is the greatest gift. I have been told that over and over again. I thought I would never experience it, not after the death of the Great Smoking Mountain and the decimation of the clans. I thought it was something lost to the past, like family and a life of ease and the great competitions. I thought all hope had been lost with the deaths of so many. Now, for the first time, I feel hope once more. Perhaps the Sach are not doomed to die with the remnants of our clans. Perhaps there is more to look forward to than merely existing. I touch her cheek again, already fascinated by her. I have not felt this strongly for anyone or anything since the mountain's death. I crave touching her. Is this how other resonance mates have felt? Or do I only feel this way because she is the first mateable female I have seen in so many turns of the seasons? I saw the other female at the same time Arjal did, though, and felt nothing for her. It is this one that holds that special spark. There is something about her that my body, my kui, instinctively recognize as mine. Satisfied that these skins are merely decoration, I take one of my knives and cut them off of her limbs, revealing more pinkish, pale skin. Her arms are thin and strangely unmuscled, as if she has never climbed a vine or a cliff in her life. Where did she come from, I wonder, that such things are not needed? Unless she has been sick for a very long time. I squeeze her upper arm again, checking. She is strangely flabby here, but the muscles do not feel tight, just soft. Perhaps whoever she lived with before did not allow her to leave their cave. Perhaps even now she is escaping them. But how did she get into the egg? Why is she covered in such strange things? Why is she pink? I continue cutting the layers off of her body. There is another strange band of leather across her teats. She cannot be nursing. I would not resonate to a female that is already taken. Another sign of illness. I cut the band off and her teats spring free, full and bouncy. Shocked, I sit back on my haunches, studying her form. I have not seen this before. My cock, already stiff, grows harder yet. I give it a quick swipe before pushing it back under the leafy loincloth I wear. This is no time to be thinking about mating. My mate is sick, clearly. Certain parts of her are swollen. Is this why she bound them, to reduce the swelling? I touch one hesitantly, squeezing the flesh. It does not feel hot with fever. The tips are a darker shade of pink than the rest of her skin, but they do not feel flushed either. When I touch her there, though, she moans and the little tips tighten. I snatch my hand back. Clearly they are tender. I see no other signs of infection, though. No cuts, no bruises, no markings or red angry lines that suggest her flesh is full of sickness. I touch behind her ears, and the nodes there are not swollen either. If this is an infection, it is a very odd one. I think of a Chai. Her teat swelled when her kit was born, but never as large as this, or as full. I did not think twice about her body, yet I find I cannot stop staring at the pink tips of this female's chest and the way her teats jiggle ever so slightly with her breathing. I do not know what to make of this, or my own reaction. I should be thinking of nothing but her health, and instead, I keep thinking of mating, of what it would feel like to pull her up on her haunches underneath me and sink into her body. With a hiss, I jerk to my feet and close my eyes, storming away a few steps to gather my thoughts. It is because this is all very new to me. I was nothing but a stripling when the mountain died. I entertained thoughts of flirting with females at the next gathering, perhaps taking one to my furs to learn pleasures. But those days never came. Now my cock wants to make up for lost time. I am never going to be able to help her if I cannot concentrate. Perhaps I need to relieve my body so I can focus on my mate entirely. It is a good idea, I think. I place one hand upon the nearest tree to steady myself and push aside my leafy loincloth, freeing my cock. With the image of her in my mind, I begin to stroke myself with precise, slow strokes, imagining her body under mine. It feels shameful to spend myself at the thought of infected swollen teats and pink flesh, and yet I have never come so hard in my life, nor has it felt so good. With a low groan, I spill my seed onto the leaves of a nearby fern. My seed is strangely thick and milky, unlike the usual clear spend. Odd. My cock still aches, even after I shudder with my release. Once more, then, and then I will be able to concentrate.
Lauren. My eyes flutter open to the sight of tall, leafy green trees overhead and shadows dancing over my skin. Am I home? In a park? Am I on drugs? Because I don't understand how I went from a winter planet to a tropical paradise, but here I am. Leaves rustle in the warm breeze, and I can hear the distant sound of the ocean. The surreal feeling continues, but when I press a hand to my forehead, I feel, well, I feel like me. I ache all over, and I swear I'm going to have salt water in my nasal cavity for weeks, but this doesn't feel like a dream. I feel too sore and smell too sweaty for it to be a dream. I rub my face, and that's when I notice that I have no sleeves, or any shirt at all. I'm topless. My long, fur-lined tunic, given to me by Liz, is gone, only my leggings and boots remaining. I vaguely remember stripping off my outer furs when Marisol pulled me from the water. Did I take the rest off in my sleep, then? How did I get here? I squint up at the trees, wondering if my eyes deceive me. They really do look like trees. Jungle trees. A groan from nearby makes me glance over. I do, and then I suck in a breath, startled. There's a man standing nearby, his back to me. He's completely naked, his tail flicking back and forth across light blue, very tight buns. He's got the broadest shoulders I've ever seen, and the broadest back with muscles that go on for days. As I watch, his arm pumps in a way that can only mean one thing. He's jerking off. What the fuck? Is he why I'm topless? Was I being molested while I slept? Horrified, I search the ground and see my tunic nearby. I snatch it, only to realize that it's been cut to ribbons. I gasp, my gaze flicking back to the man. He stiffens, and in that moment, he disappears. I blink my eyes repeatedly, not entirely sure of what I'm seeing. It's like he faded away right before my eyes. I close my eyes and press on the lids, wondering if the seawater I inhaled, or the horrid headache I have, is causing my eyes to play tricks on me. They've been getting better day by day, but people just don't disappear. I rub them hard and then open them again. The man is there again, the pale blue color of his skin standing out against the leafy trees that surround us. Okay, my eyes are being weird. That must be it. I give my head a little shake to clear it, and it throbs in response. Hi.
Hi,
he replies. It's clear that he's one of the blue people, the Sakui. Though his horns seem to be smaller than everyone else's, and his color a little lighter. I guess that shouldn't be surprising, since I've seen that the others come in a billion different shades of blue, just like Earth people come in all kinds of shades of white and gold and brown. Still, there's something about him I can't quite put my finger on. Maybe it's the fact that he's got a bit of a 5 o'clock shadow, like his face has a hint of scruff to it. Maybe it's that his teeth aren't sharp like the other Sukui. Or maybe it's because I caught the freak jerking off while I was sleeping. I focus on the trees instead. It's green here, leafy and verdant, and completely unlike anything I've ever seen before. I feel a little betrayed at the sight of it, actually. For the last week or so, the entire tribe's been filling our head with tales of how cold it is on the ice planet, how bitter the snows are, and how it just gets worse, not better. This place? This is paradise. It's like finding Hawaii in the middle of the Arctic. And it makes no sense. Just like finding a stranger jerking off makes no sense. I hold the destroyed remnants of my tunic to my chest protectively. Where am I?
Where am I?
The man replies, voice thickly accented. He squats down next to me, and I can't help but notice that he's naked. Really, really naked. Well, no, I take it back. He's not completely naked. He's got a knife belt slung over one shoulder. That's it. And, he's not exactly built like human guys. Wow, this is awkward. I want to stare at everything he's got dangling between his thighs, but that seems rude. I freeze my gaze upward. And I realize when he reaches out to touch my face that he's got a lot of hands. Like a lot of them. It takes me a moment before I realize he has 4 arms. I squeeze my eyes shut and then open them again, wondering if I'm seeing double. When the 4 arms remain, I glance up at his face, studying it for any other doubles. Wouldn't he have 2 noses if I was seeing double? But there's only one. His broad face is handsome in an alien sort of way. But he's definitely only got 1 nose. I don't remember anyone having 4 arms. I wonder if it's even polite to bring it up. I change tactics. Are you with the rest of the tribe? That's back in the village? Vectol and the other blue guys talked about their families back in a stone village on the far side of the mountains. I'm pretty sure no one mentioned 4 arms, though. Or trees.
Bek-ve-lish,
he echoes, garbling my words. His brow furrows as he watches me, as if trying to understand what I'm saying, and I realize he doesn't speak English. Okay, this is weird. All the other aliens spoke English. Maybe there are other alien tribes that I wasn't aware of. He does look different now that I think of it. In addition to his slightly lighter color, he seems to be stockier than the others. Where most of the Sukui were muscular and fit, this guy looks like he's a poured slab of muscle without an inch of fat. It's kind of freaking amazing. I've never seen a guy so fit as him. His chest is practically twice as broad as a normal man's, and he's got 2 sets of arms, one stacked on top of the other. It seems like something that would look highly unusual, but he's so fluid with his movements and so well-built that it seems totally natural, oddly enough. His face is different, too, I think. He's got the broad, strong features of the other Sukui people, but he's missing the hard, platy ridges on his forehead that they had. He's got horns, but they don't look like the gigantic, oversized ram horns that the others have. His are kind of wee baby horns that curl back from his brow and arch back, as if holding his wavy black hair back in place. "Are you one of the tribe?" I ask him. "Do you know Vectol and Liz?"
"Oosh,"
he repeats, frowning at me. He reaches out to touch my jaw, and when I jerk back, he looks upset.
"Oosh."
No, I'm not Liz. I sigh, biting my lip. I'm Lauren, but you can call me Lo. I guess it's time to break out the you Tarzan, me Jane routine. I tap my chest. Lo.
Ooh.
He begins trying to form his mouth around the syllable of my name. It's like he can't figure it out. The longer he tries, the more he makes it sound like a gagging noise. Great.
Ooh.
He says, finally half-puking my name, and then nods at me as if that was anything close to being correct. Not quite, I say. I try again, tapping my chest. Let's go with Lauren, then. Lauren.
Lauren.
He's trying, I'll give him that. It's like he's having trouble with vowels, like he's not used to moving his jaw like mine. His language must be all consonants or something. Curious, I tap his chest. Who are you, buddy? He looks pleased that I've asked. He rubs his fingers over the spot I've touched, which makes me feel all kinds of weird, given that I'm topless at the moment, and then says something that sounds a bit more like a sneeze than a name. When he doesn't continue, I realize that it is his name. Oh, boy. Can you repeat that? He shakes his head at me and studies my mouth as if trying to follow my words. One hand reaches up, moving toward my lips, and I feel all flushed and bothered at the thought of him touching me. I shake my head and he drops his hand. I hug my destroyed tunic against my chest, studying him warily. I should be freaking out over the fact that I was unconscious and he took my clothes off, but I'm not getting a creepster vibe from him. He's not even looking at my breasts or trying to touch me inappropriately. It's like all he really wants right now is to communicate. Of course, I did catch the guy jerking off. Then again, I was unconscious. The thought is awful, but if he wanted to hurt me, he could have. I hope that I'm safe with you, my friend, I whisper, because I am really damn vulnerable right now.
Ooh,
he says again, then gestures at me.
Lauren.
Aw, it's like he wants to spit the word out, or better yet, turn two syllables into one. Not quite. Lauren, I say, exaggerating the word and elongating my mouth with each syllable.
Ooh.
He frowns as if to himself, knowing that it's not right. I can't help but smile at that. It's clear he wants to learn, and it's kind of cute.
Law?
I begin again, and then pause, waiting for him to try.
Ooh.
I reach out and squeeze his slightly furry jaw, trying to elongate it into an O shape. Of course, the moment I touch him, his eyes get soft and he caresses my hand, and I get a funny little quiver in my belly. All right, Lo. Focus.
Lo,
I repeat and keep my hand on his jaw. This time when he mimics, he lets me pull slightly and tries to form an O of his own.
Ooh,
he drawls. And then looks to me. That's pretty good, I tell him, smiling. He grins back at me, and I'm struck at how attractive he is. He's still an alien, of course, but there's something so boyishly charming about that happy grin that the little fluttering butterfly in my belly does another flip.
Lauren.
He tries again, then...
Lauren.
I'll take it. I declare with a nod. Now, tell me your name again, and please don't make it sound like a sneeze, or I'm going to call you Gesundheit. I point at him. He tries again, slowing his name down an exaggerated amount that's clearly difficult for him. It sounds like Cathar, but if I swallow all the syllables and make them one weird sound. I try to mimic him. Cathar?
Cathar,
he agrees, and this time when I echo him, he seems pleased. Okay, we're getting somewhere, I agree. Ulren and Cathar, I'm pretty sure the other aliens didn't have names like that, so you must be from a different people, yes? He frowns slightly at me as if trying to follow my words. After a moment, he points into the trees and lets out a stream of syllables that I can't follow, much less pronounce. Right. I didn't catch that, but we'll just move on, okay? Are we back past the mountains or on the shore? Did you see the spaceship go down? I move my hand in the air, trying to make it seem, well, spaceship-like. Spaceship! He squints and then gestures at the trees, spitting forth another round of guttural words I can't follow. Well, shit. I hug my tunic remnants to my breasts and contemplate my situation. Someone back in the other tribe, Liz, Vectol, Mardok, had mentioned getting us a language dump of some kind so we could learn Sakui. We'd been pressed for time, and there'd been so many people, all of them speaking English already, even the alien men, that it had been put on the back burner. I wish it hadn't been, because I can't talk to my new friend. Do you know where Vectol is? I ask him, bringing up the chief's name. Vectol. He makes a gesture for drinking and gives me a curious look. Yep, getting nowhere, I say, and reward him with another awkward smile. It's not his fault. He's doing his best to help out. He says something else and motions at my boobs, which are covered up by my shredded tunic. I clutch it tighter to my chest and give him an indignant look. You're not taking this from me. I realize this is a clothing-optional beach, but I'm not feeling that vibe. I don't look down because I'm going to see a whole lot of alien penis if I do. In fact, I need a new shirt. He says something else and presses a hand to my forehead, worry on his face. Does he think I'm sick? If you think I'm so sick, why do you want me to be naked? I mutter to myself, trying to think of a way to communicate. Maybe we need to go down to the shore and draw figures in the sand. It's more pebbly black earth here under the trees, which is odd to me, but I don't know much about alien botany, or any botany. Maybe Marisol... Wait. Where is Marisol? I jerk to my feet, clutching the tunic to my breasts. Worry makes me stumble forward, and I ignore the squish of my sodden leather boots. My pants are dry, and that makes me wonder how long I was unconscious. I study the pounding waves, but there's no pod floating in the water. There's only endless black sand. Black? Sand? It hits me just now. That's new. It was greenish and pebbled on the other beach. Marisol? I call out. Are you here? The big guy moves to my side, touching my arm. He shakes his head violently, murmuring something. He's probably telling me to shut up. Like I care. Where's my companion? Where's Marisol? If she's hiding, she could be in danger. I can't leave without her, and if this alien thinks it's just me on the beach, that could be dangerous. I cup a hand to my mouth and yell out her name. Marisol! The big alien hisses something at me and touches a hand to my arm. I shake him off, even more worried. I push forward, heading for the beach. Marisol! I bellow out. Answer me! I'm here! Where are you? Are you hiding? He follows after me, reaching for my hand again.
Lauren, hist!
I don't know what hist means, but I can guess it's something along the lines of shut up. Except I don't want to. I jerk away from him and start to run, heading for the beach. Mari... My words die as he grabs me and pins me against him, placing one big hand over my mouth. I scream against his fingers, struggling.
Hist!
He repeats into my ear, and he carries me away from the beach and back toward the trees. I fight against him, but with four arms, it's far too easy for him to hold me captive against him and still keep me muffled. I feel a surge of despair as he carries me into the jungle, moving quickly, and then sets me down near a tree. He presses a hand to my mouth again, gently, and then shakes his head as if indicating quiet. There's a look of worry on his face that makes me feel uneasy.
Lauren!
He gestures at the tree, indicating that I should climb up it. What? I'm not climbing a tree. Why would I do that? I eye the thing. Even if I wanted to, it's bigger than any tree I've ever seen, with a trunk wider than I am tall and no low-hanging branches. The closest one is at the top of my reach, and I can't even close my fingers around it when I stand on my tiptoes.
Lauren,
he says again, trying to haul me up the tree. I smack at his hands, releasing the branch. Stop it! I can't climb that. It's too tall. I gaze upward, and the tree continues high above my head, and I'm pretty sure the next set of branches above are even further apart than the first set. Cathar makes a hopping gesture and then points at the tree again, urgency on his face. No, I go silent. In the distance, I hear the crashing of something big and heavy through the leafy undergrowth of the jungle. Oh, shit. My eyes widen. Something big is coming. Cathar's dusky jaw clenches. He grabs me and pulls me after him. Half dragging me to a tree a few feet away, I want to protest, but I'm too afraid to make a sound. The crashing noise is getting closer, and my new friend has a rather grim expression on his face. He hauls me to the new tree, a short, squat thing covered in large, jagged leaves that flutter in the wind, and presses me against the trunk of it. The tree's far too short to climb, only a few feet taller than me, and so I'm not sure what he wants until he puts a hand over my mouth, and then he captures my hands with his, pinning me against the trunk with his big body. He gestures to his own mouth, indicating quiet. He's protecting me with his body. Terrified, I nod. The crashing sound comes closer, and I can hear the snorting breath of a loud animal, at the same time that a terrible stink touches my nose. Ugh, it smells like hot roadkill and dead things. I swallow hard, and the look Cathar gives me is one of warning. Even as his hand remains pressed to my lips, the message is clear. Don't make a sound. Don't move. Don't breathe. I don't do any of those things. I'm too scared. My eyes are wide and locked to Cathar's, and I tremble against him. He keeps his hand against my mouth, but his fingers feel less like a press and more of a caress. His gaze is soft as it meets mine, and he doesn't look worried. Protective, yes. Worried, no. It's that protective look in his eyes that makes me feel flushed all over. It feels intense to gaze into his eyes. Our faces so close together that I can feel his breath on me. He's got the same bright electric blue eyes that everyone does. The cooey blue gaze that speaks of a symbiont. I feel strange. But then the creature thunders right past us, all leathery skin and stink, and I go still underneath Cathar's shielding body. I can just make out parts of it from over his shoulder, and I see lots of horns, lots of brownish-gray skin, and a long swishing tail that saws down plant life as it passes back and forth. And it's just walking past us. Maybe this is one of those things where, like in the movies, the dinosaurs can't see people unless they move. I hope. I look back at Cathar, and I realize that he's changed color somehow while I was focused on his eyes or on the creature that's paused behind us sniffing the air. Cathar's thumb rubs over my lips ever so softly, reminding me to stay silent, as if I could speak in this moment. I'm too stunned by what I'm seeing. It's not the horned lizard behind us that has me so surprised, but my new friend. The fingers laced with mine have changed to the color of tree bark. And as I study his arm, I see the rest of him has turned the same color. We completely blend with the tree, and his larger body hides my non-camouflaged one. I have so many questions I want to ask. Could the others do this, and I just wasn't aware of it? But they didn't have the four arms that he does, and Cathar doesn't speak English. I don't know that he's one of the same aliens as the others, or if he's a completely different kind. All of this is a mystery. The creature nearby makes a waffling sound, and then lumbers away, but Cathar doesn't move. I don't either. I'm not going anywhere until he gives the okay. I study his coloring instead. He somehow managed to perfectly match the tree. Maybe my eyes aren't so bad after all. Maybe I saw him shifting colors like a chameleon earlier. It's fascinating. His grip loosens on me and I slide my hands out, but when he continues to cage my body against the tree with his arms, I know it's still not smart to walk away yet. The creature's still nearby, even though it's getting farther and farther away with every step. That's fine. I can stay here, because I'm far too interested in what's before me. I run my fingers up his arm, wondering if he's going to stop me. Truth is, I want to see, to feel, if his skin has the same texture that the tree bark does, because he's matched it so very perfectly. It just feels like skin, though, warm and smooth, and I'm even more fascinated by that. I should probably stop touching him now that the creature is moving on, but I can't help myself. He shudders, closing his eyes, and it's like I'm transfixed. I want to keep exploring him, keep touching him. I know he's a stranger. I just don't care at the moment. I slide my fingertips up one bicep and then across his shoulder. He presses so close to me, I can feel all of his body against mine, and I can feel the excited rasp of his breathing as it quickens. He likes my touch. I can tell by the way he reacts, and by the way certain parts of his anatomy are stiffening against my stomach. He's completely naked against me, and I'm just now noticing that, and that I'm topless, my tunic forgotten somewhere in our haste to find a tree. My breasts are pressed up against him, and I can feel every breath he takes right down to my pores. I've never been this close to another person, especially not a stranger. There have been boyfriends, but it's never seemed like the right time to take things very far. There was always something else. Or I just didn't like them enough. I've never been nearly naked with any guy pressed up against me, and never one the size of this man. It's breathtaking. I inhale deeply and my nipples graze against his chest. They harden immediately and I feel an intense jolt of longing sweep through me. I'm not the kind of girl to rub against a guy naked in the jungle, but it seems today I am. I can't help myself. I gasp and press forward, moving against him again just to feel that sensation. He groans, low in his throat. Cathar's hand goes to my hair, and he grabs a handful, tilting my head back and exposing my neck. I whimper, expecting him to kiss me, but all he does is lean in and sniff deep, as if he's just now aware of my scent for the first time. I've never been sniffed by a guy before. I never realized such a small thing could be so very erotic. But as his nose drags along the cords of my neck and he inhales, if I had panties, they'd be wet. I want him to kiss me. I want to know what it'd be like to be possessed by a guy this big, this primal. I didn't realize this was my thing at all, but I'm learning quickly that everything's different on this planet, and I really, really want him to kiss me. I reach up and caress his jaw, angling my mouth toward his. It's a silent request for a kiss if there ever was one, but all he does is rub his face against my neck once more. Maybe his people don't know how to kiss, but that can't be right. I've seen Liz and her mate, Rahosh, sneaking kisses when they think no one is looking. Maybe he just doesn't want to kiss me? That can't be right either, though. I can feel just how much he's turned on. His cock is a bar of heat pressing into my stomach. His hands roam over my shoulders and caress my hair, and I can hear his heavy breathing panting into my ear. He's as into this as I am. Heck, the guy's practically purring. Purring? I freeze. No way. Cathar looks up at me, heat in his eyes, his sexy mouth parted as he gazes at me. God, that's something else. I get all quivery just looking at him. In fact, I'm quivering even harder with every moment that passes. And then I realize it's not just him that's purring. I am, too. With dread, I realize what this means. When they gave us our cooties, the tribe told us what would happen. The cooey picks a mate for you and resonates whenever they're near. Your body hungers for that other person, and you're incredibly turned on to the point that you can't think of anything other than having sex with that person, and it continues until someone ends up pregnant. Veronica and the big golden guy back at camp resonated to each other, and he looked at her like he wanted to devour her. Like the way Cathar's looking at me right now. I press a hand to the center of his chest. Sure enough, I can feel the thrumming of his cootie in his chest, purring and vibrating its song. Resonance, I whisper. This could be a problem.
7. Cathar. I grin with satisfaction as my female resonates to me. Now she understands. Now she will yield to me, and we will mate. I need to get her away from this area if there are Kari nearby, so we can have time to yield to resonance and enjoy each other. I like that thought very much. Loren, I murmur, touching her chin. Come, we must get away from this place. She gives her head a little shake, indicating she doesn't understand me. I bite back my frustration. It is not her fault she cannot grasp my words. Wherever she is from, her people did not speak the same as mine. I do wonder at a clan that puts people in eggs, but perhaps she will tell me more in time. For now, all that matters is her safety. We must go, I tell her again, my colors rippling to match the leaves of the nearby trees. Through the branches is the best, safest way to get my mate home. Loren gasps and touches my skin, fascinated by the colors. Her reaction is surprising to me. Does she not have camouflage of her own? She remains the same pale, whitish pink, and that fills me with concern. How can she protect herself if she cannot mask her appearance? Even little Zoren changes his colors, and he cannot yet crawl.
Pink,
she tells me, patting my chest again.
Shit, this is bad.
I do not understand her nonsense words, but I cannot get distracted by her touch. We must take to the trees. I will bring you to my home, where you will be safe. It is high in the leaves, beyond where any Kari can reach, and the branches will shield us from Skyclaw. On the ground here, we are vulnerable. She looks troubled.
Campfire snatten.
Yes, I agree. Very vulnerable. Come. I gesture at the branches of a nearby tree. You should be able to reach this one with your small hands. I worry that she only has two of them. What if she should lose her grip with one hand? The other will not be strong enough to hold her weight. The answer is simple. I must carry her. For one of the clan of the strong arm, being carried is a deep humiliation. It is why Nadek refuses to leave the clan home after the loss of his leg. Once you are beyond a kit's age, it is expected that you will rely on your own strength. But I remind myself that Loren is not of my clan, and there is no shame in carrying her. I carried her off the beach after all, but she was unconscious. That is different. I must carry you, I tell her, indicating with a gesture that we need to take to the trees.
Need to talk about Resonance's problem,
she says to me, patting my chest again. Ah, she is asking about mating? I am delighted at her eagerness. My cock can wait until you are safe, my lovely mate. I lean in to nuzzle her in a show of affection so she knows I am still pleased with her. She makes a soft yelp and slaps my cheek.
No!
I frown, surprised. Is this how her people show affection? Slaps on the face? I do not think I can follow this custom, One of my lightest taps would send her delicate body reeling. I will come up with different ways to pleasure you, this I promise, I tell her, and press my hand to her lips. Quiet now, while on the ground. Lauren blows out a little breath from her nose, clearly frustrated. I had no idea mate would be so very incensed that I do not flip her onto her back and mate with her right here. Her safety must come first. Soon, I promise. Do not doubt that I want you. Surely you can see that. I gesture at my aching cock, then my singing heart. Is this not clear enough? Her cheeks camouflage slightly. Curious.
Not what I meant.
My mate's tone sounds as if she is giving in to reason. I am glad. I extend my arms to her again, offering her the chance to come to me of her own accord. I will carry you, I say, indicating to the tree again. That way I know you will be safe. Brow furrowed, Lauren shakes her head at me.
Don't understand.
No, it must be so, my mate. Do not argue with me. You are not of the strong arm. There is no need to feel embarrassed. I move forward and pull her against me. Lauren stiffens, struggling against me. I hold her arms down with mine and use my free hands to begin climbing the tree. I go up a few branches and then pause, because she's stopped struggling, and then move her arms to my neck. Hold on to me. Her cheeks are camouflaging that strange shade again.
Feel a little silly. Thought she wanted something else.
I know you are eager, I soothe her. Time enough for that, I promise. I must have you safe before I have you under me. Then you can slap me to your heart's content. She says nothing, her arms tight around my neck. I prop her legs around me and remember that she still wears the strange layers over them. Something to fix when we get to the tribe. She will want to be free of such things, I know. They cannot be comfortable. Much like my own aching cock is making climbing rather interesting. It juts out from my groin, stabbing at the branches as if they are my mate's warm flesh. It will not go down, either, not with Lauren pressed so sweetly against me, her swollen teats rubbing against my chest and her arms around my neck. With her body against me like this, even as I climb, I think of mating. I cannot help it. Her enthusiasm for such things, along with the steady song in her chest, brings my own need to a fever pitch. Her legs are wrapped around me, and I cannot help but think it would be so easy to slide her forward just a bit and sink deep. It is a shame she wears these layers, or we could both get what we want. With a gusty sigh, I climb higher into the trees, heading for the canopy.
Lauren. For the first time in days, I really wish I couldn't see so well now. Without glasses, it's relatively easy to phase out what I see, to mentally isolate myself from things. I can't see it happening, so it can't be so scary. Unfortunately, this no longer seems to be a coping tactic I can use. I'm acutely aware of just how high up in the trees we are, and just how far below the ground is. My new friend, Cathar, doesn't seem to notice how very high up we are, because he moves through the trees as if he was born to them. Branch several handspans away? No problem. He'll just leap to it. Tree, not strong enough to hold his weight? Piece of cake. He'll springboard off of the trunk with his legs and fly over to the next tree, all without stopping. My extra weight doesn't seem to be a burden to him, because he climbs and hauls the two of us around with such speed that I feel like I'm getting motion sickness. So I just cling to him tighter, arms and legs wrapped around his body. He holds me against him with two arms, and his others move swiftly from branch to branch. Clearly this sort of travel isn't a problem for him. Great. One problem down, so many to go. I know Marisol should be my chief concern. She's a grown woman, of course, and should be able to take care of herself about as well as I can. We're all equals right now because no one's familiar with this place. But I know Marisol has struggled to adapt. She likes to hide away from the world, and I focused a lot of my fear and worry into being her protector. I haven't lost it, because I knew Marisol needed someone to be strong, so I volunteered. I don't know how she'll fare out on her own. I don't even know if she's safe, or if she's alive. I can't even ask. More than the problem of Marisol being missing, I don't know where I am. This place doesn't match up to anything that the others have told me. It's not snowy in the slightest, and the air is hot and muggy. The greenery is out of control huge, and none of this makes sense. Did I somehow get taken to yet another planet while sleeping? It sounds ridiculous, but I'm pretty sure all of this is ridiculous. Tapeworm, ice planet, blue guys, four arms, and it's happening to me. I would love for a big pinch to wake me up, but that's not happening. The big guy shifts me against him and his cock rubs up against my thigh as he climbs ever higher into the trees. My cootie purrs as if it's thrilled by this small contact, and I have to admit that I'm feeling a little hot and bothered myself. Yeah, that's another problem. Resonance. I was warned by Liz and Harlow. It's a side effect of the cooey, and everyone that has a cooey experiences resonance at some time or another. Since it was either cooey or death, I chose cooey. I knew this was bound to happen at some point, since all of the humans that had been rescued on the ice planet so far had resonated within a year or two of arrival. But seeing as how we only had four unmated males in our group, and one had already resonated with someone else, the odds were good that it'd be a long, long time before I resonated to someone. I didn't count on Cathar. I didn't count on this island or wherever we are, and I sure didn't count on resonating to someone the moment I saw them. I don't know what to do about him and I. I mean, there's nothing to do, but it feels like a problem I need to solve. I'm pretty sure he's going to want to mate. I am also pretty sure I'm not ready for that. Mentally, anyhow. Physically? Oh boy, is my body ever ready. My cootie's thrumming a mile a minute, and his is, too, reminding me that I'm not the only one feeling the effects of resonance. I'd been told that it would be impossible to resist, and at the time I was also rather certain that most people didn't resist because they didn't want to. That it was more of an endorphin high than an imperative of some kind. Oh, how wrong I've been. Resonance is more or less a slap across the face telling your hormones to get in line, because they are about to get served. My breasts haven't stopped aching and feeling tight since my cootie started acting up. My skin feels sensitive. My, lady parts, they feel achy as well, as if needing something that isn't there. I know exactly what that something is, and my body's just going to have to wait. I am so not ready to jump into a relationship. He says something to me, his hand hitching lower and caressing my butt as he chuckles. Yeah, I have no idea what you just said, I tell him moodily. Step one of this budding relationship is establishing some sort of communication, even if we end up with mostly yes and no questions. I have a lot of damn questions. Cathar gestures again and then pats my hip with one hand and points at his neck with another. Oh, I think I'm holding on too tight. I feel my cheeks heating. Sorry about that. He reaches up and caresses my cheek, saying something again. I'd slap his hand away, except for the fact that I need all of my limbs to hold on to him so he doesn't drop me. I'm going to let that one slide for now. Another garbled sentence. He points up and I glance up too. Oh God, we're near the top of the canopy. It's a dizzying sight, and just angling my head up like that makes me queasy. I close my eyes and bury my face against his neck again, moaning in horror. I didn't realize I was scared of heights until just now. Cathar murmurs something soothing, and his hands tighten on me again. This time I don't mind the hand on my butt. If it lets him hold on to me better, I am all for it. I can feel his muscles bunch as he jumps again, our bodies moving and swaying. I keep my head down because I don't want to see any of this travel. He pauses and I feel the ruffle of wind against my hair.
Ulrin,
he whispers, then strokes my arm. You should probably be holding on to something other than me, I point out, not lifting my head. Focus, buddy, focus. I'm too important to drop, I hope. A big, comforting hand strokes my hair.
Ulrin,
he says again.
Visk.
The big guy keeps repeating that and touching my shoulder, and I realize he wants something. Biting back my fear, I lift my head, just a little. I see Sky. Terrified, I clamp my legs around him harder, clinging to his neck. Don't drop me!
Esket.
A pat on my back.
Ket.
I glance up at him again, and when he gives me an encouraging smile, I ignore the surge of my excited cootie and try to look around this time, to see what he's showing me. There's more sky, and my hair whips around my face, flying up. I can hear the rustle of leaves up here, hundreds and thousands of them, shivering in the breeze. The sky is pale pinkish-orange in the parts where the suns can be seen under the clouds, a sign that night's going to be coming soon. And beyond the trees, bottle green. Water. I gasp, sitting up straighter. The ocean. It's the same ocean as before. I squint, not daring to raise a hand to my eyes, but I'm pretty sure I can see for miles and miles around this high up. I swear we're in the highest tree in the forest, and if I could get past being terrified, I'd probably think that's cool. I haven't left the planet for another one then. I'm on the same planet, just a different place. I bet if I could see far enough, I'd see the icy peaks of the other side. Unless I'm a continent away, of course. Something tells me that I'm not, though. It's weird because up here with the breeze, the air feels colder. Down below amongst the trees, it's humid and muggy. But up here, it's as brisk as I remember. Cathar says something to me, gesturing at the land. I say, just to respond, but I'm not paying attention to him. I'm trying to think. Something about this is making me uneasy, and it's not just the height we're at. I gaze outward at the water and the trees all around us. There are islands in the distance, a little flatter and not nearly as green as this one. It's interesting, though, because they're curving around, almost as if they're making a big circle. There's more water, a paler, bright green, than the rest of the ocean, like a lake. Except it's strange because at the center of the lake, there are bubbles and a plume of smoke. Just a tiny one. Realization strikes me. I know what this is. Clinging to Cathar's neck, I turn, trying to see behind us. We're at the highest point for what looks like miles around, and from here, I can see almost everything. It's like we're up the side of a very steep cliff, and down below spreads out miles and miles of trees. In the distance, I see the faint black line of sand. I turn my head again and gasp. At the far end of the island, where the land narrows, it's all black and smooth land. This wouldn't be all that alarming except that there's smoke pouring from the water in a steady stream, sending masses of smoke into the air. I know what this is. I saw a video about Hawaii back in Geology 101 in college. An active volcano that still has flowing lava makes steam when it hits water. In the distance, that's cooling lava that's hitting the ocean. Lots and lots of it. I gaze downhill, then toward the tiny plume in the center of the lake that's surrounded by islands. Except it's not a lake, and we're not